Namaskritya Nilipas Sandarshitatmane Avyaktaya Cha Devanam Devaya Swapuram Yayao Adrishtaya Namaskritya Nripasandarshitatmane Avyaktaya Cha Devanam Devaya Swapuram Yayao Adrishtaya Namaskritya Nripasandarshitatmane Avyaktaya Cha Devanam Devaya Swapuram Yayao Adrishtaya, under one who is beyond the purview of material vision. Namah Kritya, offering obeisances. Naripa, the king. Sandarshita, revealed. Atmane, unto the Supreme Soul. Avyaktaya, who is beyond the manifestation of the material world. Cha, also. Devanam, of the demigods. Devaya, unto the Supreme Lord. Swapuram, to his own house. Yayao, returned. Translation. King Prithu then offered his respectful obeisances unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is the Supreme Lord of all demigods. Although not an object of material vision, the Lord revealed himself to the sight of Maharaj Prithu. After offering obeisances to the Lord, the king returned to his home. Purport. The Supreme Lord is not visible to material eyes, but when the material senses are inclined to the transcendental loving service of the Lord and are thus purified, the Lord reveals himself to the vision of the devotee. Avyakta means unmanifested. Although the material world is the creation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he is unmanifested to material eyes. Maharaj Prithu, however, develops spiritual eyes by his pure devotional service. Here, therefore, the Lord is described as Sandarshitatma, for he reveals himself to the vision of the devotee, although he is not visible to ordinary eyes. Thus ends the Bhaktivedanta purports of the 4th canto, 20th chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam, entitled Lord Vishnu's Appearance in the Sacrificial Arena of Maharaj Prithu. So, the living entity in residing within the cosmic creation or within the Lord's potency decides whether he's going to serve the Lord, accept his natural position or not. So the Lord's energy, being one, is manifest everywhere, unlimitedly, in all directions. But, so there's no time, there's no space, is the unlimited manifestation. I mean, it's unlimitedness. Unlimitednessness. But then, the individual living entity, in appreciating the personality of Godhead, then interacts. So, if he interacts in a favorable way, then this unlimited potency, unlimited energy of the Lord, responds by manifesting forms which are favorable for the interaction with the Lord, for knowing the Lord, for experiencing the relationship with the Lord. But if the living entity decides he doesn't want to do that, that trying to engage himself in activities for his happiness, and these engagements don't include the Lord, then this unlimited potency manifests as the external energy. So, basically it just comes down to how we want to see and approach the Lord. It's basically that simple. We want to favorably be absorbed in the Lord, then we will see the Lord, the infallible Lord, because infallible meaning there is no material form, there is nothing that has faults. But if we're not interested, then we won't see the Lord as a person. Just we will perceive his himself throughout the manifestation before us, but we will be unable to see him. So even though he's present, we can't see, because if Krishna is everything, that means he's not different from his creation. That means at all points in all places, he is what you're looking at. But we're unable to appreciate, because his potency is manifest, the forms of interaction through the inferior potency. Well, for those who appreciate the Lord, then he manifests through his internal potency. So now, because it's one potency, and the Lord is the sole source of this potency, this point of not being able to see with the Lord, with the material senses, is natural, because if one is not interested in the Lord, then the manifestation of the Lord's energy is going to be through matter. So one's senses are going to be manifest through matter. And the potencies empowering them with the ability to see, with cognition, to be able to understand, then we'll all be done with material elements. So therefore, even though the Lord is there, one can't see, because he is beyond the inferior. He's actually beyond the superior also, but it is the superior that reveals the Lord. So now when Pritamars, with his devotion, is dealing, and we see is the quality of his devotion is constant. No matter what the situation, what is the opportunity, he only sees it in relationship to the Lord. So, the actual manifestation of the internal potency is what will be perceived. Though, we see that because of the situation here and the application of time and space, then in the general, one is dealing with the inferior energy in manifestation. But in its working principles and results, it's you're dealing with the internal potency. As we said, it's the same person. Yoga Maya, Mahamaya, same person. Different offices. So now, we see that the Lord himself directly is manifesting because of he has the right attitude. He has the attitude of those of the spiritual world. So Krishna will reciprocate with him in that way, not in some other way. So it's not astonishing that Pritamars can see the Lord, because we see his dealings are always in connection with the Lord. But being in connection with the Lord, we see he's very cultured. Right? He's a gentleman. He's a nice person. He's free from all unwanted elements. So the performance of a service isn't distracted by material desire, laziness to be inspired in the spiritual. There's no bad qualities manifesting, anger, greed, lust, through his service. So he's cultured. Everyone appreciates. So we see the various demigods, it says, they presented themselves and he worshipped. They're great personalities throughout the universe. They don't need to show up at his yajna. Right? I mean, there's the karmakanda element that you perform your duty and then you get the result. But that's all that's establishing is when you do this activity, this makes this person happy. So therefore, they're going to come and give you a benediction. Right? So you feel it's my work that's causing that. No, it's their pleasure that is actually happening. Right? But because there are standard ways of human interaction, right? Rasa has a natural path. Then it can be defined. So he acts in a certain way, and that action then pleases them. And so they're all there. And he is performing these duties as a king, but not for some material benefit, because otherwise it's very official, right? The demigod is there, you perform the activity, then officially perform it, officially they'll come, there'll be the exchange, you go away, enjoy your material benefits, and completely forget the demigod. And the demigod, you know, goes back home, just another ordinary day at the office. Nothing special, right? But here, we see that Prithu Maharaj, what he's performing, this is uncommon. So his performance of these duties, even though we would classify it generally as a fruitive work, he's not doing it for the fruit. So that perfect performance, everybody is pleased. So then these personalities, they present themselves. It's not that they stand over there and wait for you to notice them and then, you know, you interact. No, they're coming and coming forward. Right? Great demigod, they come forward, he deals with them nicely, like that, then the next, and the next, and the next. And this way he's dealing with everybody. So very personal, very cultured. This is the devotional platform. We think that it's something else. It's just a matter of dealing with it properly or not. That's all. There's only, as you said, there's just the Lord's creation. You deal with it properly, it responds in one way. Deal with it not properly, it responds in another. And now here, we see is, but what is the proper way of dealing? Right? King Nriga, in the descriptions, his performance of the Karmakanda Yajnas were faultless. Right? So many other great personalities, Yayati, Nahusha, perfect performance of duties. But do we hear of these descriptions? The demigods are there presenting themselves, you know, just waiting for him to notice and then interact. No. So it's not the ritual. This is the mistake. Well, no, I do everything properly. I'm chanting my rounds. I'm going to the Mangalarti. I'm doing all my duties. I'm, you know, this and that. But it's the attitude that makes the difference. The form is only to carry the attitude. That's all. Right? Now, form is important because it's a natural form that goes with an attitude. There's a natural situation for an exchange. Right? So, those are established by the Lord. Right? And everything expanding from the Lord will work on the same principle. Right? Works on the same principle. You deal in the right situation with the right attitude in the right way, and somebody's going to be pleased. Right? It's just the way it works. It doesn't work in another way. Even if you take these, you know, more, not sure of the pleasant word, but meaning, you know, more, let's say the environment's not the, what we call pure goodness or goodness. You know, you have some Kali worship, you know, so at midnight on a dark moon night, you know, some ritual is being performed that doesn't deal with your standard elements that one would consider of piety or cleanliness. But still, you have to follow authority, do the right ritual, have the attitude that goes along with it, right? Be trying to please whoever it is that you're worshiping. So it still is the same. So what's changed? What's changed is the environment due to our taste. Right? Kali and Parvati are the same person. Just when the environment and the attitude isn't so nice, then she manifests as Kali. More nice than as Parvati. Right? More nice than that, than Yoga Maya. You understand? So, in other words, how we're perceiving, how we're interacting, is how the response is. It's not something else. So, if this is understood, then it's very personal. All the different rules and regulations are just giving fine detail on how to interact. But the ritual gives an indication. It's performed, but it only gives an indication of other elements that are more important. Right? One is doing, worshipping the deity, everything is clean and pure and on time. So that's important, that creates the environment. But the point is the mentality is completely pure. You're dealing with the Lord, so He's completely pure. So therefore, His attitude is completely pure. Therefore, if our attitude is completely pure, you have a common ground. Right? And punctuality is that when there's something to be done, you're attending. The person walks in the room, you have that moment only to interact. If you ignore them then, you know, and just finish doing that little bit what you wanted to do, and then you look up with the big smiles, it's already too late. The moment's gone. Right? Now you have to do damage control. Right? So that's punctuality. There's a moment. There's a time to eat. There's a time to go to rest. There's a time to, you know, do this and that. That's how it works. Right? You know, it's not like you wash your mouth and then after 5 minutes, then wash your hands. Then after another 5 minutes, wash your feet. No, they go together. There's time. So it's only part of interaction, part of relationships. It's not something else. So everything has its time. Therefore, in deity worship, time or punctuality and cleanliness are the most important, because if the attitude towards the other person that you're relating with is pure and you deal in the proper moment, then the relationship's good. All it's defining is proper dynamic relationship. Then within that you have details. You apply that to when they're sitting, when they're standing, when they're taking bath, when they're eating, when they're sleeping, when they're waking up. Right? What is it? When thou liest down, when thou walkest by the way. All that kind of thing. Right? Does that make sense? That's what's going on. It's not something different. It's only the personal relationship with the Supreme Lord. But because we are accustomed to the externals of dealing with the external energy, which means for us just forms, because we're not recognizing the Lord in the forms. That it's His potency that makes it attractive, makes it work. Right? The material energy doesn't function on its own. It's pradhan until Krishna looks at it. Then when He looks at it, then you have mahat, which is dynamic. But before that, there is, it's not that, it's just atoms. That's all it is. The 24 elements are just in their form of atoms that are homogeneously mixed together. No distinction. And it'll stay like that. It's eternal, and it'll eternally stay like that. It started like that, and it is like that. But when the Lord glances, when He enters, then it's animate. But we just see the form. So therefore, it's natural that so the form is there because the form and the person you're interacting with go together. Right? The form, the person, the situation, the means of interaction, Those are all manifest. You can see them. But the point is the relationship. So here we're used to just the forms without the relationship. So therefore, then religion will define ritual. But at the same time, it points out ritual isn't the complete package. Ritual is the medium, the situation for interaction. But not being well adjusted with this concept, therefore, it'll start with something that you can see, because that's what we're used to. I'm going to do something, then what can I see? What's the situation, right? I want to go skiing, so I'm not going to do that here on the pavement here. Okay, so I got to go to a situation that's cold enough and there's enough precipitation that there's snow. Or at least there's some guy rich enough to invest in a snow machine, the machine to produce it, right? Still it has to be cold, right? But no precipitation, right? So the snow is there. Then, you know, I'm not going to stand on it. Okay, then I need these funny little flat things that I stand on and then I can move on them, right? Because, I mean, that's the thing. Unless I want to go drive all the way up there just to throw snowballs at each other and have my fingers freeze, right? No. So that loses its, you know, fingers will freeze, but you can do something else, you know. Does that make sense? So where you're used to, okay, that there's something going to happen, I'm going to be happy. What's the situation? What's the activity? Right? But the point is we're always looking at our happiness or that which is important to us. But it's what's extended sense gratification only is a platform because it's yours. Right? So we can say, no, I'm being selfless. But you're only being selfless to what's yours. You understand? That's all. You're not being selfish to what's not yours. And you can say, no, but I'm feeding others' kids. But you consider all children to be yours. Therefore, that's your own mood of sense gratification is extended to them, include them. So something where you're acting for someone else's benefit, without that, that's different. That's new. So we don't think about that. So it's automatic. I'm doing this for my happiness. So we don't worry about result other than that I'm going to be happy. That's how we judge the results. Good. I'm happy. It was good. I'm not happy. It wasn't good. But we'll focus on the situation and the activity, which is what's going to get your happiness, right? So now when we're working on God's happiness, that throws us off because how do you judge it? I can't tell, you know, I'm really getting something out of this. You know, I'm getting a buzz, you know, out of this. No. So therefore, then the situation and the activity don't have that natural spontaneity because it's being done for us. So now we notice the situation. We notice the activity. Therefore, we call it a ritual. Now, in performing that ritual, that's good. But we have to remember that when the Shastra says it's not the ritual that's important, it's that attitude and that trying to please. That's because we're only trying to remind ourselves of what we do for ourselves. What we do for what relations we consider important. Right? We work hard. We don't see it as a burden doing things for what is important to us. So all that the Shastra is pointing out is you should do the same in spiritual development when you're trying to develop a relation with the Lord. It doesn't change. It's the same thing. Right? But that doesn't mean, the attitude's important, I drop the ritual. That's called the sahajiyas. Right? Or, no, it's you have the rituals right, and when you get that right, then all the results will come. So that's called the smartness. So Vaishnava means the combination of both, not the removal of both. Right? Right? Karma and jnana, the activity with the proper knowledge, is the platform of Buddha Yoga. Not no activity, no knowledge, and that's perfection. Right? Even the Buddhists, I don't think, will buy that. As a goal, yes, but as a method, no. That makes sense? Yeah, inside nothing, but outside you have to have a wall, right? Otherwise, how do you get the nothing? Okay, so is this, so we see here is that this Prithu Maharaj is, that his ability to see the Lord is because of that surrender. He's seeing the whole process. Every situation, being within the Lord's creation is for him. Every activity is for him. Right? And so that result, seeing that it's coming out nice for him and not in any time, thinking that I could get something out of this, I could enjoy this in some way for myself, separately from the Lord. Then therefore, the Lord appears before him. He's within his creation. He can appear before him. It's just a matter of Yogamaya or Mahamaya is giving him his senses. That's all. So in this case, it's Yogamaya. Any questions, comments? Yes.
And that the attitude is what is important. So my observation and personal experience is that intelligence and knowledge, or knowledge through intelligence, is not a great attitude changer. It means activities we can to some degree govern with intelligence. But the actual intrinsic attitude towards something, my experience is this generally changes through experience, which is generally not pleasant.
No.
So, do you have an insight into getting the attitude right by avoiding the unpleasant experiences that usually correct things?
Okay. In other words, yes. Yeah. So, it's explained that the living entity, there's two qualities that create its identity. So we're not dealing with existence because everything exists. God exists, His energies exist, they've always existed, they always will. So that's not the discussion. So it's knowledge and love. Right? So we're dealing with the Abhideya and the Prayojana, or the Samvit and Sandini. I mean, Ladini. So, as you're saying, is the knowledge means knowledge of the situation and knowledge how to apply to that a situation to get a result. Right? So that's knowledge. And as you pointed out, is because the intelligence, all it is doing is perceiving the differences are commonalities. So it's not actually making a choice. It's the mind that makes the choice. So the intelligence will take us through the steps. And if our the more fine the intelligence, the more fine we can see of the steps. You know, so you have someone who does the activity, but it's a bit gross, and someone else does it and it's very sophisticated. It's just a matter of how refined is the intelligence that they can see the details of what's common and different, so then that moves towards their ultimate result. But what's choosing that is the mind. So the mind having an idea of what it wants is not necessarily intelligent. Right? So when we learn through experience means we haven't learned by hearing, we haven't learned by seeing, so we have to experience. So it naturally being the third principle is going to be more gross, right? It means the first one we hear, so it's not technically manifest, right? The second is that it's manifest, but we're not involved. We're seeing it manifest to someone else's, you know, situation. Then the third is where it's manifest to our situation. So naturally, we're more involved. So the mind is, it will experience the happiness and the stress, right? You know, it's just like, let us say you see two people and they're interacting and something's going wrong. If you're looking at it, it's so easy to see, right? It's just, you know, oh, hey, he should have done that, and this one should have said that, and they should have responded like this, and oh, that, and they shouldn't, you know. But if it's yourself, because the mind's involved, it doesn't flow so smoothly, right? So one has to go through the whole rigmarole, and then finally, and then after many, many times of that, then you start to. So that's actually the key, is that the intelligence is still the important element, but it's the mind that has to accept it actually as reality. So going back to the first point, this element of love, and Bhaktivinoda Thakur describes this in a very interesting way, is that there is only love, because Satchitananda, this happiness means that happiness of exchange, it's love. But now, when love is applied to something, it takes on a particular quality, right? So when it's applied to Krishna, we always call it love. But when it's not applied to Krishna, it's applied to something external, it takes on another quality. Example being given, when you apply love to wealth, then the quality that the love takes on is called greed. When that love is applied to the appreciation of the feminine form, it's called lust. You know, so like this, anything you put it into, it has. When you apply it to sports, then it'll call excitement. Or does that make sense? So understanding this, then it's a matter of if the mind can accept that the only way it's going to actually taste happiness is in relationship with the actual direct person, with Krishna, rather than indirectly in the forms that we don't see him in. Because the potency of wealth is still Krishna, because he is the source of opulence. So that means he is the most, you know, he is the perfect manifestation of wealth. So if we understand that what we're looking for in money is him, then that love is applied directly to him, it doesn't manifest as greed. And the greed's what gives us the trouble. The money doesn't technically give us the trouble, right? And that we have that desire and that need, that's not actually the problem. The problem is we're applying it without seeing the Lord in the relationship. Does that make sense? How to affect the change? By constantly thinking about this. You know, because if you constantly think, then after a while the mind starts to get adjusted. And then in the beginning, of course, it's still going to go, I mean, that the complaint is that you only learn after experience. One should actually appreciate to be good. Because there's a fourth stage. After getting the experience, we still don't learn. You know, so that you've come to that third stage from the fourth, that's serious progress. Because most people, you know, they don't get past the fourth, right? So that's there. So it's just a matter by contemplation, then there'll be those things that are not, the attachment's not so great. Though you'll be able to start working them out on the first and second level, by hearing and seeing. But those things that are more, then naturally be there. But if you contemplate it, it starts to separate the elements, because the attachment's only very great when we see it as a complete package. You know, if you cut it up into pieces, it's not very attractive. You know? So that's what the intellectual point does, is that it breaks it apart in its mechanics, but it brings it together in its connection with the Lord. So instead of it being brought together in its connection with us, it's brought together in the connection of the Lord. Instead of looking at it as a whole unit and therefore we're attracted to it, and it breaks it down, so you know what you're dealing with. So you can still deal very well with it, but at the same time, as it reduces some of the glare, because it's the glare that bewilders us. Like that. And that's coming from ignorance. The example is given, if you, let's say at noontime, high noon, you bend over a body of water, you will see your shadow. It'll be very dark because of the sun. But if you look carefully around the edge of the shadow, it's more light than actually the light being reflected on the water. There's that glitter, it's that glare. So that's what happens because of the ignorance of not seeing the Lord. Then there's a glare that's there. So we're attracted by the glare that's around the ignorance. So if we can remove the ignorance, that glare goes away and we see it for what it actually is. But being a sadhana, it's practice, because we're not used to dealing, we're used to relationship, but we're not used to understanding the completeness where that third part, the love, is actually beyond our own purpose, you know, of our own happiness. Does that make sense? We're just not accustomed to it. But we're very used to situations and activities, at least if we're intelligent. Like you see someone who does well in the world generally is very aware of situations and activities and the connections. So therefore they're able to get. Those who are not aware generally don't do so good. You know, of course you have the person with the karma, he's going to get it anyway, so he doesn't know what's going on and all these nice things happen to him, you know, like that. But the, does this work? Yeah? Okay. So anything else? No? Huh? Okay.
Some experiences in life aren't repeated.
No, but one can contemplate. Huh? Yeah. You got to get it right the first time, or you can contemplate, because the point is the advantage of being the soul being eternal, it will have some application later. Maybe not here, but, you know, in the future. You know. Because the relationship with Krishna, all these elements within relationships and situations, those are eternally coming up in the spiritual platform. So there's always time to apply it. But if that's where, you know, the mind goes, then that's where you break it down. And if you can't, means that if it's too overwhelming, then distract the mind into something else that is important, but you can relate to. In other words, apply the greatest amount of intellectual contemplation on those things that aren't so emotionally overwhelming. And apply it to the other things as much as you can. Right? You know, in other words, it's like an example would be, when you're in the chi doing the great circle, you do it as much as it creates no heat in the first chakra. Right? When that heat comes, you stop. So as soon as it starts to emotionally, then you stop on that and go back to the ones that are easy to deal with. But it's just that little bit chipping away, and then after some time, may take years, but still, years is great. If you think back, you know, it's like you're saying, is that it's a lot of things we could have done better 20, 30 years ago, you know, so 2-3 years is not bad, you know, that you start to notice and all that. Does that make sense? So it's just a... something else? Or... Yes?
I might have misunderstood, but I think you were saying that if you have the right form and attitude when dealing with the Lord, the result will be pure or what you expect. But usually we're dealing with other people and who are not well. Who are not pure.
Who are not pure.
Yeah, and so then we may think the result of that interaction, even though we have a pure intent, that it's not right, what comes out of it. But okay. As you said with him, that in the future, then that experience will come to your advantage. And so, but in that moment when you feel like you're really being mistreated, then it's very difficult to deal with that, even though you know, your attitude is right and, you know, you're doing the right thing. So, yeah. How it can really, in that moment, to realize that what's going on is right, even though your mind is thinking, oh, this is wrong.
Mm-hmm. Okay. The point trying to be expressed is that you have, let's say, a particular emotion. Now it'll have its pure manifestations, and it'll have, you know, less pure or impure manifestations, but the principle on which it functions is the same. You know what I'm saying? So let us say you have a very... okay. Okay, like a very pure relationship, like a, you know, spiritual master, disciple kind of situation. And there's the element of respect. So it's a matter, you know, the whatever is the principle of the relationship, there's something greater that in the teacher that's being respected by the student, and that there is the therefore the opportunity for exchange based on that principle. Therefore, there's respect for the student. Right? So knowledge being the thing, this teacher has more knowledge, the student has less. But because the student is inspired to learn, therefore the knowledge can be expressed. Otherwise, how do you express if there's no student? But how do you learn if there's no teacher, right? Does that make sense? So there you're dealing, let's say, with transcendental knowledge, but the principle is the same. Now, if you drop it down just a touch, then someone's dealing with, you know, a material knowledge, but on a shastric, you know, let's say astrology or something like that. So then it's based on the shastra, but it's still the same principle, right? You drop it down further, it's not connected to the shastra, it's still the same, right? Now let's say you drop it even down, you know, social, way down. So you have a gang, right? Or a mob, like this. So you have the new person, he's learning. Then you have the elder person who knows something. So you respect them for what they know. And you're inspired and willing to do, then they respect you for that. Right? That's the problem with these groups, is that the principal is, they're very dedicated to who's senior to them, and the seniors will protect whoever's junior. That's why they're hard to deal with. Because the actual principles are at work. But the level of purity, what we were discussing before between, let's say, Vishnu worship and Kali worship, is the environments and the levels of exchange are very different, very refined, and very unrefined. Does that make sense? So the impurity isn't so much the problem. It's the being able to pinpoint what's actually the working fundaments of the exchange. You know what I'm saying? Like teacher and student, it's knowledge. It's not that he's respecting him in this way or that way. No, it's knowledge is the basis. You know, so the thing is when we're engaged in an interaction that's not going nicely, much of the time it's because the actual position of the relationship is not understood by one or the other of both parties. That's why we see is that, like an extreme example, well, I mean so many extreme examples, but in the 11th canto, the Avantipur Brahman, after he takes sannyas, he's moving around. It's not that most people are dealing with him nicely at all. The young punks of the village are coming up, and while after he's begged and he's put down his food and he's saying his prayers, they come up and pass urine on it right in front of him. Steal his danda, pass urine, and you know, poke him, you know, just harass. Because they're taking their relationship to be based on social convention. And the enthusiasm of youth. So they're not seeing is that, no, here's the difference. The relationship's based on something else. It's based on, again, on knowledge or on the spiritual content of ashram. And that's the basis of the relationship. So those who understand it will respect the Avantipur Brahman as a sannyasi. Those who look at it something different, the businessman sees, I'm rich, he's poor. So they're looking at the wrong thing. But because they're seeing that the living entity is simply acting on his value system alone and is unable to see beyond that, that's why the situation is unpleasant. So then, because that's the limit of what they can deal, then they don't feel bad towards the individual. Right? It doesn't mean the makes the situation any better. It just means your emotions don't get involved. And the way to see that is either, in the case of the Avantipur Brahman, by contemplating the philosophy and things like that, or Yudhishthira Maharaj contemplating Dharma. You know, so either the Dharma or Moksha elements. But as one advances more, then one can see from the devotional. You know, they're all servants of Krishna, but they don't know. Just like the small child comes up and, you know, you tell them you can't have that. And so they get very upset and they come and start beating you or grabbing your cloth and pulling and crying. But you don't get upset. It's a matter of that's all they can do. Because that's the biggest picture they can see. Right? They're not seeing that if they don't go to bed now and they don't, you know, like that, they don't eat their you know, some candy now, that they're not going to be able to get up in the morning, it's going to be a problem tomorrow at school and this and that, and they're going to rot their teeth out. So they don't see any of that, but the adult does, so therefore they don't become disturbed. Right? Does that make sense? So, yeah. Because within, it is an emotional disturbance. It is improperly done, but not in the fundaments of its own principle, but in the bigger picture of what is the actual how those principles should be applied to the actual standard relationship. So all it is they're using the wrong perspective to figure something out. Does that make sense? So if you can figure it out, then you won't be disturbed by others not being able to figure it out. Because the point of view, if you're on that platform, you're happy. You know, if you're happy, it doesn't matter if everybody else isn't. You're in a good mood. Right? Is that's the idea. You know. Is that okay? Last? Grantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivrinda ki, Jainatai Gaura Premanandi.